If we do finish top, I will be the first to come back and say, yeah, I said this back in
February.
Yeah,
didn't you have money on them to get relegated this season?
Mm.
I don't think we could have asked for a much better week for Reading Football Club. 4 signings, 9 points, and we've cut the gap on the top two to just 3. How good could it get come May? We will allow our imaginations to run wild here on the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode number 116. Hello, thank you very much for joining us for this latest episode. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersen.com, and my co-host today, our Tyler Sen deputy editor, Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Good evening. Like you said, an absolutely fantastic week, I think. Potentially a season-defining one.
Yeah, shall we just wrap the show up here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We'll see you next week for 117. And joining me here, also alongside Johnny, is Tyler Sen assistant editor Mark Mayo. Mark, hello.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. And just to have a nice little reason to go on with the show, I can say that maybe it's going to be a defining week like the January was in 2012-2013 under Brian McDermott.
And when we failed to sign anybody decent.
Well, that was when we won all those games from comebacks, wasn't it?
And then, yeah, it was, yeah. Mr. Lafondre.
And we thought we were staying up.
Oh, those
manager of the month, Brian McDermott.
And player of the month, Adam Lafondre as well. Sacked 6 weeks later.
And the rest was history.
You have been warned, yeah. Anyway, we'll stick to the positives for the time being. And on the positive front, just a massive thank you to people who continue to contribute to our Patreon campaign. That's our crowdfunding campaign, if you've not picked up the gist from me mentioning it every week for the past month or so. Head over to patreon.com/TylerSen. Think of it like our tip jar. If you like what we do, if you think these guys do some good work, they deserve to be rewarded for it, I want to hear things get better, I want to hear bigger and better things, stick your hand in your pocket and donate what you can. It's not a requirement, but it really does help make that day that little bit brighter when your little email alert pops up saying X has donated. So thank you very much to those who have done so in the past week, including Mac Tiger, Sam Richards and Mourinho. Don't think it's Jose. Although it might be, who knows?
Yeah, maybe he's giving a little love and kind to Yapstam, a Man United connection.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we did put them through to the next round of the cup, so you can give back to the podcast. Anyway, as mentioned, it was a pretty damn fantastic week, so we'll delve into that in the recap.
View from the Tarhurst End, recapping this week's Championship action.
Well, the last time we recorded a show, Reading had just been beaten against Derby, and the previous game had seen them lose at home to QPR. So spirits were a little bit all over the place with myself and Westy, but, I predicted 2 wins, Johnny. I think I was the only one that predicted 2 wins. Even I wouldn't have predicted 3 wins from the next 3 games, but that is exactly what Reading have got. A 1-0 win over Fulham, a 2-1 win over Cardiff, followed up on Tuesday night by a 1-0 win away at St Andrews against Birmingham. What more can you say? Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And I think in each game, you've really faced different challenges. That Fulham game was, I think, the most entertaining game that I've seen at the Medeski Stadium all season. And you have to really thank Fulham for their part in that as well. They play a very expansive and open game, and that sort of allowed both sides really to just, cut and thrust back and forward. And it really made for a very entertaining match against Cardiff. Well, it's Mr. Warnock in charge, so you knew what was going to happen, and certainly a few tasty challenges flying in on Liam Kelly. But again, we showed the grit to lock in once we'd got that second goal. And really deny Cardiff having any major opportunities. And then, going away to Birmingham, again, without a few, what you'd say, are key players in the system, really, the likes of McShane, the likes of Kermigant, Joey Vandenberg, who I know has faced some criticism recently, but I think, certainly does a job. So to go there without 3 important players and again pick up a win, even if Birmingham haven't quite taken to Gianfranco Zola yet, I think it really shows the character of this team. It really could have started to derail the season. We'd lost, 4 matches in a row in all competitions, if you included
Manchester United. Yeah.
And again, we said on previous shows we conceded, 15 goals in 5 away games or something like that. To go to Birmingham and keep a clean sheet on a Tuesday night, I think real credit to Yapstam and Reading to fight back in the way they have.
Yeah, Mark, which was the most impressive result out of the 3 for you?
I think it's probably the Birmingham one, because the Fulham one, at the end of the day, could have very easily been 1-1, but for a penalty at the end of the game. The Birmingham one was a difficult one because they are a team that haven't won in 9 games, but we went to Bristol and they were on a 7-match losing streak or something, and they were 2-0 up against us with 20 minutes to go. So you can't take these things for granted. Watching the highlights, there are quite a lot of chances around both sides, and you learn a lot about a team when they have these bad runs, like we're saying, and to go there and get a clean sheet primarily, I think, was a really good result.
Yeah, I think all three, as you mentioned, Johnny, had various merits themselves. I think the 1-0 win over Fulham was a big marker, because I think defeat that night would have seen Fulham close to, I think, within 3 points of us.
Yeah.
And they're our bogey team. We've really struggled against them in recent years. I mean, they've beaten us 5-0 in this season. They were looking good in the Fog game as well. And to get that win, okay, it didn't come in pretty circumstances. Reading getting a what Yapstam admitted was a soft penalty. We missed it again. That is the, what is it, the 6th penalty out of 11 we've missed, but the 5th yes. one we've managed to convert the rebound.
Yeah, only one has been actually truly missed.
Lee
it?
Camp, I think, is the only man, the Rotherham keeper, to properly keep one out. So a ridiculous stat. We won't go back to the luck argument, but look, if that's happening, 5 rebounds out of 6, I'm going to the casino with those guys tomorrow.
I don't think that's the sort of thing you can do on the training pitch. Unless we've just discovered a really revolutionary tactic that hasn't been discovered
sneaky
in
penalty assist.
I was thinking maybe there's a way you can, like, if I haven't done it yet, but if you go back to all the penalties, if you see where the person who's rebounding it lines up, maybe the goalkeeper knows that that's the way it's going to go, because that's the place that it's going to rebound straight to the bloke. So maybe if there's something on that.
What I love every time from these missed penalties is you see the away fans go, yeah! And their hopes raised and dashed within a second.
And there's that expectation that almost, it's a weird sensation. You almost go into a penalty knowing you've got 2 chances at it now. Like, I almost expected us to miss that penalty against Fulham and put it in on the rebound. It didn't mean once he'd saved it was over.
I never remember penalty rebound. There's only one penalty rebound I remember, and that was the playoff semi-final against Wigan. Other than that, I can never remember one.
I remember Jason Roberts got one in 2012 against Bristol City.
He scuffed against David James.
Yeah, and then he managed to, like, chip it over from a yard. That went in eventually.
A horrendous effort. But yes, I have no idea who's going to be next to take the penalty. John Swift was the man to miss on this occasion. Thankfully, the rebound was stuck home. But, you know, they get that win over Fulham. You mentioned, Mark, it could very easily have been a draw. Liam Moore has had a January to forget. He's made several high-profile errors, giving away a penalty in the last minute of this game. Fortunately, Ali Alhamzi bails him out by saving from Chris Martin. Go into the Cardiff game, and once again, he's giving away a penalty. Now, you throw in the errors he had at Derby and Manchester United. Is there anything to worry about from Liam Moore, or is this just a really bad, unlucky streak?
I'd like to think that it's a bad, unlucky streak. And to be honest, the fact that he had such good form beforehand should make it that we should be confident enough in his abilities. If it was Van den Berg giving away all these penalties, we'd probably be thinking about how much we can sell him for before the summer. But
not a lot.
As it's Liam Moore, I think we can just about let him get away with it. And with the reinforcements, it might add the competition that will serve him to buck up his ideas somewhat.
Would you reckon, Johnny, anything to be concerned?
I don't think so. I think, as they say, form is temporary, class is permanent. And I think you've got a body of work from Liam Moore over the last 4 or 5 months that arguably puts him in player of the season contention, although Mr. Swift, I think, with his contributions in the last couple of games, is making a late run at that again.
Johnny, are you a fan of John Swift by any chance?
Who?
I know.
Never heard of the bloke.
Fair enough. He scored 3 goals in the last 4 games. Maybe you should read up on him. Including the first goal against Cardiff. Lovely swept home effort, but the assist from Gareth McCleary. Oof. I'd have some more of that, please.
Yeah, and it's something that we saw in the later game against Birmingham as well, obviously lining up with no strikers. But we're finally getting into that box-to-box, late charges, into-the-box territory that you really want to see from these players that you know have got immense technique, such as John Swift, such as Liam Kelly, where they can make those late charges into the box and they are there. And obviously against Birmingham, we lined up with no strikers, so you're almost relying on that, but it gives you that, you know, that threat that we always talk about. Someone like Sidwell, who used to make those late runs into the box and got 10 goals from midfield, and that's what we're seeing now with the likes of Swift and potentially Kelly as well. And I think it's, you know, it's a sign of confidence from the team that perhaps they've been let off the leash a little bit. Now that we've got those points on the board, Yap Stam is saying to these players like Swift, like Kelly, you can go and gamble. Because one thing we did say about Reading over the last 3 or 4 months is they've been quite formulaic. Whereas now when you're adding those rogue runs in, if you like, it gives defences an added dimension to worry about.
Well, you do say that, but I mean, I looked at the heat map against Cardiff, and what struck me was this great big clean zone, if you will, around the Cardiff box. They did a really good job of packing that area with, seven, eight red shirts in it. And Reading were really struggling to break down. I didn't think they were doing enough of those dynamic runs. Credit to Swift for being in the goal. And at the end of the day, Reading got the two goals they needed. Jan Kermigant's free kick being the other one. But I still think that there's not quite that penetration and skill in the final third that they need to kill off sides, because we're talking about three wins all by a single goal. Doesn't matter, they count as much as if you win 5 or 6 nil, but from a comfort point of view, you are leaving yourself open. And when you couple it with the errors we've mentioned and the mistakes from the defence, I still want to see a little bit more potency in that final third. But I mean, the signings, which we'll come on to shortly, should hopefully tie that one off. And so they get the 2-1 win over Cardiff. Kermigan's free kick, fantastic. I noticed Neil Warnock wasn't happy with the ref.
Mm.
Kel Surprise. Is he ever happy with anything?
Barely.
Not that I've ever seen.
No. Question for you. What makes Neil Warnock happy? And they got to Birmingham on deadline day. Injury hit, as you mentioned, Johnny. Lacking several key personnel. And again, got out a win. A 1-0 with John Swift with a winner. Good little assist from Jordan Obita. Good to see that side of Obita again. That driving force down the left-hand side. Really nice to see him get the assist, and Kelly playing a part in the build-up as well. Get that 1-0 win, and suddenly we're talking 3 points off the top two. Okay, Newcastle, who were that team 3 points ahead of us, do have 2 games in hand, but on the basis of these results, gents, are we now suddenly looking up to those top two, or are you still looking at that place, that team in seventh, and thinking, okay, that's the team we need to put the gap between?
I'm still looking seventh in reality, because it's so much more pleasing in effect, because there's about a 9-point gap at some points. It's been hovering around 6 and 5 as well. Maintaining that gap above 3 points is such a confidence booster, and it's such a relaxant as well, is that it makes it feel like we're not about to fall out of it, because we're not. And I don't know, looking forward, you're going to get dispirited a lot, because Newcastle playing QPR for the first of their games in hand up until... maybe if they come down to us in March and we get 3 points over them, you might really think, let's make a proper late surge. But until then, I think it's more satisfying to look at the seventh.
Do you think this could be a similar situation, Johnny, though, to the one we found ourselves in 4 years ago, where I think at this time of the year, everyone was talking about Southampton and West Ham. No one's going to catch Southampton and West Ham. I remember doing the bookie watches at the time. West Ham's odds for winning the league were ridiculous.
I'll tell you what, do you want me to give you a bookie watch now?
Go for
Newcastle 3-4. Brighton,
is this for promotion or to win the title?
This is to win the title.
Okay.
Newcastle 3-4, Brighton 11-8, Reading 150-1.
Wow. If ever there was worth gamble a cheeky aware. Pound, yes, for gamble aware. Well, it was the same. Again, going back to that season, I remember doing the bookie watch, and I remember Reading being about 250-1 to win the title around the December mark. And they just got on that ridiculous roll. And it started a little bit like this. There weren't the grandstand results. They were jamming little 1-0s. Like you mentioned, that Bristol City game. Remember them beating Burnley 1-0 on the telly. And the momentum just grew and grew. And the boost that they should be able to now get from these three signings on deadline day and the fourth one in Adrian Popper, they should be going places. I really think now you have to look at that top two rather than the seventh place. You look back at history, even before the Birmingham game, the teams in third, after I think it was the 28-game mark we were on before the Birmingham game, in the last 9 seasons, none of them had failed to make the playoffs. It would take something spectacularly bad, not that we can ever rule that out because we're pessimistic Reading fans, but there is no logical reason now why Reading should not make that top six. And there's every reason for them to try and hunt down that top two, because the pressure, I think, is on them now. It's not on Reading. Brighton have been there and nearly missed out on several occasions. Newcastle have obviously got massive expectation on them. Why can't we go and chase them down?
I completely agree with you. And the thing you have to remember is we're still yet to play Brighton away, I think. And Newcastle is at home, currently on a Tuesday night, although I imagine the cameras from Sky may be rolling down.
Could very well be.
Yes, if they decide to put a big team on telly for once, I'm sure Leeds will still have a few televised matches before the end of the campaign. Fourth place Leeds, yes, above them in the league. I won't get any more into that. But yeah, I think when you consider that we've got two games against the two, yeah, let's just call them promotion rivals. You've got two games against them. Obviously, they'll be very difficult to win. But if you get those 3 points and take the 3 points off them, suddenly you are really right in that mix. And I mean, if you look at those odds, like I mentioned earlier, I think you'd be silly not to think that we do not have a 150-1 chance to win this league. If Brighton lose two games in a row, and it could happen, if Newcastle's, lose two games in a row, if we beat both those sides, we are really in the mix. Oh,
massively generous odds.
And the fact that, we are out of all the cup competitions, I think, Brighton are as well.
And Newcastle both got dumped out on the weekend.
Oh, well, we'll ignore that point then. But they've had to play one game more, so that could
They still have that game to make up for the one they played on the weekend. I would advocate, though, as a kind of closing point for me, is that taking ourselves out of it, do you think that West Ham and Southampton are better or worse than Brighton or Newcastle and the league around us? Because I would consider Brighton and Newcastle as potentially better than those two teams were.
West Ham are very similar to this Newcastle team, I think.
I think the league was worse at the time, but West Ham had, from what I remember, a silly, silly squad.
They were a Premier League team, Championship.
I mean, yeah. They were like Newcastle at this stage. They had, the likes of Ricardo Vazte, Mark Noble.
Yeah, Bob Green was in goal.
A back four that was absolutely top class. Southampton had just come up from League One, so they were riding crest of the wave. But you look at the players that they had in that team. They had the likes of Lallana and Lambert, who have gone on to far greater things.
Yeah, they got Billy Sharp in for the second half of the season.
Yeah.
They're quite similar, and in their coaches as well, Allardyce, Benitez and Houghton Atkins. We can draw similarities. I think that the league, in relative terms, dropped off a little bit. And I'd also wonder if West Ham and Southampton were more precarious, and in terms of their points at this stage, than they were compared to last year.
And Reading had to rattle off a remarkable run of wins. I think, what was it, something like 11 wins in 13? Something along those lines.
Yeah, and we went to West Ham and Southampton and Brighton and won the league with a game in hand. It is one of those things that was remarkable at the time, and I think repeating it would be, again, remarkable.
Could our biggest enemy not be the opposition, but our own pitch? Because I looked at that pitch against Cardiff and thought, oof. Now, I mean, no disrespect to Reading ground staff, who I'm sure are working their very best, but it is a horrible surface. And Yap's mentioned a couple of press conferences that he's not happy with it, and they've had to deal with it. It's obviously the same for both sides, but with the style of Reading play, is this a problem for you, or do you think it's something that they can deal with?
Well, it's almost hard to simulate, really, isn't it, on the training pitch? You can't really say to your groundsman on the training pitch, yeah, take a bit of grass off, slop a bit of mud on just so we can...
Post the rugby training there once every week.
Yeah, let's invite London Irish down to the training ground as well. It is going to be a bit of trouble, but at the same time, the opposition is playing on the same pitch as well. I think I said similar a couple of weeks ago. You've got to just deal with the circumstances, really.
It was noticeable. I mean, John Swift was doing some nice little touch, and there would be the odd one that would just bobble ridiculously. You just hope that doesn't come back to haunt them. It should get better as the spring goes on and gets a bit more chance for growth and stuff. And that's what you hope at the very least. Liam Kelly. I said at the top of the show, it can't get any better. Can this lad get any better? I mean, what a find. What just a fantastic find and a real bright spot in a season. The only thing that I will say with Liam is I remember having similar conversations around the emergences of Michael Hector, Jordan Obita, Jake Cooper. All three of them went through sort of, I don't know, sophomore slumps. Is that the right word, Johnny? Or the right phrase?
Second season syndrome.
Yeah, even within their first seasons for some of them. Is this a case? Is Kelly this good? Or do you think there's a case of he might regress as oppositions get a little bit more knowledge of him? Is he good enough to sort of overcome that, is what I'm saying?
I think he is. Like you say, you do have to remember the fact that he is one of our own, as the chant likes to go now. And he's in his first 6 months or so, so there is sort of that honeymoon spell about a player. But you remember the likes of Michael Hector or Jake Cooper, when they came into the team, they were, you know, they were treated with the same love. Everything that they did was, you know, applauded. And if they made a mistake, it was very much a case of, oh, don't worry, you're a young lad sort of thing. And then, you know, the following season, it is, well, you've outstayed your welcome almost. You can't make those mistakes anymore. You've got to really step up your game. I think Liam Kelly, he plays further up the pitch, so his mistakes are perhaps going to be less prominent. He's less likely to give the ball away directly leading to a goal or something like that. And also, I think his technical ability is just going to get him out of so many problems as well. And what he can do on that pitch, you see he hit the bar against Birmingham, he set up the goal for a beater. I think his intelligence on the pitch really gets him out of a lot of trouble.
It's his tenacity as well. I think that's what I've noticed, is that he's really keen to get stuck in. And I think sometimes players underestimate him. I remember he was getting in for aerial challenges for Sol Bamba. Now, that's not a favourable matchup for Liam. He's not afraid of anything. And I wonder if there's just this little psychological thing at the back of some of these experienced Championship players' minds where they go, this little guy, he'll be fine, I don't have to worry about him. And I think that might play into his advantage. I think sometimes we've been looking at it and going, oh, well, is his height and his stature a weakness of his? Maybe he's using it as a positive. After all, it never does Lionel Messi any harm.
I was about to say, I'm sure they thought the same of Lionel Messi when he first set out. Or Aguero, who's of not quite a short, but a similar stature.
The question I've got for you, Mark, is Kelly now undroppable? Is he that first name on the team sheet now? Is he that good, or is he still someone that you think the matchup needs to be right for him?
I think he is probably undroppable, because you can look across the other options that we have in midfield, and I'm not really sure that there's a midfield three that you would consider having to play.
Is he above even Swift in that pecking order at the moment?
I don't think so, because Swift is 3 and 4, as we were just saying, and he had the penalty chance against Fulham. But he can play with Swift, and then you can put another player like Vandenberg, Williams, maybe even Evans, or Oxford, as we just signed.
And Jordan Much.
I don't know about Much, we'll see about it. But those three players, at the very least, can all do the job. And unless one of, or all three of them, are unavailable, then there might be a problem. And we can always drop to a 4-4-2. We can always, you know, mix and match a little bit, 3-5-2. So I would consider him undroppable for now. But that can obviously change.
Where does he sit in your pecking order, Johnny?
I think he's got to be near the top. And, you know, like you've seen, when you've got Kelly and Swift in the team, especially when you've got no strikers up front, I think you get enough creativity, enough charges, enough technique in there to really create chances for yourself. So you don't necessarily need to rely on a striker, because you've got those two who can grab the goals from midfield. The one thing I'd worry about with Liam Kelly, and it's the same of any young player, burning him out at a young age, because in the Fulham match, he came off in the 83rd minute. He was gassed. He was absolutely knackered. Now,
it was a
high intensity game.
Cardiff, they were dead on their feet as well.
So you can certainly understand that. But I think, you know, that's what Yapstammers, as I'm sure we'll come into, these transfers aren't necessarily to come straight in, but to supplement the squad and give you different options. You can go away to Brighton, where you probably won't want to play Kelly and Swift, because you're not going to see as much of the ball as you'd hope. So you can perhaps drop one of them and put in, say, Jordan Much or Reece Oxford. And so I think it's just going to be about managing Liam Kelly. We've seen the amount of ability he has, but he's not a man yet. He is still relatively young in the footballing world, and I think he'll need to be managed, because he's a real talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And fingers crossed it grows. I mean, we had these, dare I say it, these comparisons early on with Gylfi Sigurdsson, and we saw what he's done and continues to do so. Getting another goal at the weekend, didn't he? He's almost single-handedly dragging Swansea to safety, which always fills me with mixed emotions when Swansea and Gylfi are involved. But yeah, as mentioned, still third in the league, cutting that gap to 3 points. Onwards and upwards, fingers crossed. We ask this question every week. I'm going to ask it again. Where are Reading going to finish? Mark?
Fourth at the moment.
Johnny?
First.
First?
Why not? I'll be the first to have said it.
Are you going to give those bookmakers some money again?
I think this has happened before on this podcast. In a certain couple of years ago when Vidra and Piazzon arrived at the door.
Just after we beat Middlesbrough and I said, yeah, we're going to finish top. Also, if we do finish top, I will be the first to come back and say, yeah, I said this back in
February. Didn't you have money on them to get relegated this season?
Gamble away, because Johnny does not.
Indeed, this is why you don't see poor bookmakers. I will say, I think I'm around with you, Mark. I think they're finished about fourth. But I'll be delighted to be proved wrong by us finishing in the top two. Right, as mentioned, transfer deadline day was in the past week as well, just in case it escaped your attention. We will get onto that, where there is lots of activity to talk about with Reading, and we'll look back at the window as a whole in one big bumper edition of News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
That transfer window has slammed shut. Wherever this ill-fated transfer window lives, I've never been able to get to the bottom of it. Anyway, it is over. Reading can no longer bring in players unless it is a free agent who is unattached to any club. They have gone through this transfer window signing five players, three of which all came in on deadline day and one in the week of the deadline as well. In all, we signed Thiago Alori a couple of weeks ago from Liverpool. Adrian Popper arrived from Steaua Bucharest, the winger. Jordan Much on loan from Crystal Palace. Reece Oxford joined on loan from West Ham. And Lewis Grabban was the last to arrive just before the deadline. He's joined on loan from Bournemouth at the end of the season. A few players went out the door, all of them on loan. Stuart Moores went to Luton and unfortunately had a bit of a mare on his debut. Have you seen this?
Yeah, it was the goalkeeper scored against him or something.
Well, it's more just he'd flapped completely at the cross. Dom Samuel has gone to Championship rivals Ipswich, who we play, funnily enough, at the weekend. Zach Jules has gone north of the border. He's joined Motherwell, as has Niall Keown, who's gone to Partick, while Craig Tanner and Tariq Fosu have both stayed out on loan. And Sean Long has gone to FA Cup giant killers Lincoln. So, and he was on the bench for their win over Brighton. I think he came off the final few minutes as well. As for how much money we've spent in this window, well, it varies depending on which sources you read. Thiago Alori was about 2 to 3.5 million. Popper's about $500,000. And the other three were on loan, although I imagine we're paying a fair amount in wages. I did see one report saying we're paying all of Reece Oxford's 10 grand a week. So there you go.
Not bad for a 17-year-old, is it?
No.
Yeah, more than I was earning at Toys R Us.
Yeah, I was on £4.31 at Woolworths. I found my old payslip the other day.
Woolworths,
yeah.
That ages you in itself, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, exactly. In Newbury. Anyway, so looking at that overall, thumbs up or thumbs down to the transfer window and Brian Tevreden's work. Johnny?
Got to be a thumbs up. I think Thiago Alori, from what we've seen of him in the limited time, although obviously he's now out through injury for a while, certainly looks like he has something about him. Adrian Popper, I would love to say I've watched this guy play, but I haven't. So, absolutely no idea.
Not an aficionado of the Romanian league?
No, completely not. Okay. And
disappointing.
More into the Latvian league myself.
Oh, okay.
If you ask me about that, I'd know everyone, but not Romanian.
Okay, getting your questions into at the Tarlhurst End for Mark's next appearance.
Yeah, Popper, he played at Euro 2016, didn't he?
Did I
read in the press release?
He certainly did.
So, well, he didn't stand out to me in that, and I don't remember anything he did, so he's obviously a good player. And Jordan Much, I think, he seems to be one of those frustrating players who's really good at championship level that just never quite steps up. At Palace, you know, the reviews we got from Palace fans basically said, yeah, he's all right, but he's nothing special.
Yeah, you can go read that on the Tarlhurst.com at the moment.
Yeah, I got a copy of the feeling from that Jordan Much, he's a bit of a much for muchness sort of player.
Hey.
In that he's a luxury, and we don't really have any luxury players at the moment, do we?
Yeah, but I think that's good. If you don't have any, it's good to have one in the squad, surely. He's very versatile. He can play sort of around the midfield, and he gives you that sort of cover for the Swifts and the Kellys of the world. And Danny Williams as well, he can do sort of all the roles. The one that most excited me was Lewis Grabban. All the window, well, ever since the end of the summer window, we've been crying out for a striker, someone with a bit of pace, someone with a bit of different. And Grabban just ticks all of the boxes, at least the Grabban that we saw in his pomp at Norwich and Bournemouth anyway. He's obviously had a rough time since rejoining Bournemouth. He's not really settled back down since moving back there for £7 million. But I remember him tearing us apart, Johnny, at the Vitality Stadium on at least one occasion, forming a great partnership with Jan Kermigan. I mean, what part do you think that played a part in why he went after Graben? Do you think that the Kermigan connection played of any sort of factor in Stam and Teverden's calculation?
I don't really think so, because as much as anything, you'd think he'd be a direct rival for Jan Kermigan. I mean, Jaap Stam doesn't seem like the sort of manager who would go for a Mike Bassett 4-4 effing 2, does he? and so, you know, I'm not sure that necessarily. Maybe he listens to Tal SM podcast and did a bit of Googling. Oh, this lad sounds good. Maybe you should put in a claim for your finder's fee there.
Any worries about these three coming in on loan, Mark? I mean, we all sort of praise the fact that Reading had gotten away from signing loan players after the disaster that was last season. Any worry that they've brought in three in one day? And two players that haven't exactly been around their team. Well, all three players haven't been around their team as much this season.
Well, I think that's probably why I wouldn't have signed Much or Graben. Maybe grabbing on a permanent, but then Bournemouth paid what, 8 million for him?
7 million, I think.
Can't see them letting him go for anything less than 5, and we just don't have that. Oxford, I mean, you're not going to get it permanently. That's just a fact. So I'd happily have him on loan. He's a good player. Much, we will have to wait and see. As I say, it's a roll of the dice with loans. You're either going to get a Griffin Ledgerwood style system where these players refine their previous form and they do really well, or you get, as I said earlier, the Vidra Piazzon sort of situation where they're not really that bothered. You'd like to think the fact that we're third should be motivation enough for them at the start, at least.
Yeah, I think it's a different situation because now these loans are about supplementing the squad. Before, when we took in 5-6 loans, they were all players that had to come into the first team, and you thought these are players that should perform and need to perform. The likes of Vidra, the likes of John, the likes of Hector when we got him back, the likes of Pierzon, who quite frankly didn't live up to the expectation that we had of them when they came in. Whereas now we know that we are a playoff chasing side even without these players. This is just about the Tuesday Saturday rotation saying, you know, okay, I can give Liam Kelly a rest for this game, I can bring in Jordan Much, I can give Jan Kermigan a rest, as, you know, he's 34, he's not going to be able to play 90 minutes week in, week out, potentially two times a week. I can bring in Lewis Graben. Reece Oxford, he can cover pretty much the entire, well, 8 positions across the back, really, can't he? I'm not saying that's goalkeeper, that's the back line in the midfield.
Yes, yeah.
You know, these loans, I think whilst it's disappointing that the owners haven't perhaps fronted up the money long term, at the same time, they didn't really need to, because we know that we've got the basis of potentially a promotion squad anyway, so there's no need to really rock the boat, spend 9 million on Scott Hogan, that sort of thing, and then go and lose to Brentford on the same day.
Well done. Yes.
Well done, Villa. So, you know, you can't really disagree with the things they've done. Adrian Popper seems a low risk, potentially high reward signing, and Ilori, one for the future, you hope.
Yeah, real shame that Ilori's picked up that injury. It's likely to keep him out for 4 to 6 weeks. Wish him a speedy recovery there. Unfortunately, injuries mounting up for Stam at the moment. As mentioned, Kermigan missed the last game, as did McShane. Obita and Blackett were dealing with niggles before that. But the good news is Dennis Rackles as well. Obviously not a new signing, but to be very cliche, he's like a new signing because he's back to fitness. Played 45 minutes for under-23s in a 3-3 draw with Derby the other night. Again, just giving those extra options for Stam and really boosting the squad at what is a key time.
Yeah, extra options to deal with the fitness more than anything is what I'm pleased about that with. As you just said, Johnny, about Kermigan isn't going to be able to play 90 minutes twice a week as we would expect. Rackles, I've never really been sure what he offers much more than a finisher. He's got to prove that. He's got a long way back from his fitness as well, because it's a broken ankle, wasn't it?
Against the McDons.
He was out with. So, I mean, he's an option. I'm not going to be unhappy about that. The fact that we've sent Samuel out on loan, obviously, as well, proves that he's going to be in and around the first team at least.
Yeah, good move for Samuel, Johnny.
If he gets in the team, yeah. I think, I don't know whether the Championship is slightly above his standard at the moment, but I mean, if he can prove it this season at Ipswich, then either here or elsewhere, then hopefully he can get up to a Championship quality. But I think you have to wonder about someone like Dominic Samuel, whether this is his ceiling now.
Yeah, I don't think when you get Grabbing in, I don't think there's any place for Domsdow. I mean, I've said it several times. If he struggled to get in on a regular basis in what has been the worst crop of Reading forwards, with due respect to them, for a 20 years probably, maybe going back to the Burns era, if he can't break into that team, and he's not young anymore, then when is he going to break in? And in that run of games he had earlier this season, yes, he did get a couple of goals, but really underwhelming.
Who would you rather have, Keith Scott or Dominic Samuel? You have to think about that.
Depends what Keith... I'm probably saying Keith Scott, which
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh. Keith Scott and his pomp was good. It's just unfortunately he came to... I remember when he was at Wickham, he used to terrorise us. Yeah. Then, unfortunately, Reading sided when he turned naff. Not the first time that's happened.
No.
But yeah, pomp Keith Scott over... Keith Scott at his prime is much better than anything Dom Samuel's done.
Yeah, but Keith Scott when we had him. Samuel when we have him.
Yeah, I think they're much of a much at the moment. Yeah. But anyway, that's like throwing me a Paul Brayson question in there. I can't really argue with any of the players that have gone out. I think it's good to see players like Jules getting experience. He's at Scottish Under 21 International, will do well out there. And unfortunately, he's working under Mark McGee, but what are you going to do? Niall Keown, he's at Partick up with Ryan Edwards, who's done really well out there as well. Fosu, again, we've talked about him plenty. I'm disappointed that he's not come back, only because... not because he deserves to come back, but he's not actually done enough to prove he should come back, and that is a disappointment in itself. And Stuart Moore needs to get games. Jonathan Bond's come back from Gillingham. He'll be the third choice behind Yacola. There's no point having four good goalkeepers here. And Rob Dickey came back as well. Jake Cooper also out on loan at Millwall. He's done really well. I would like to say it's nice to see Jake doing well at Millwall. He's got some really good reviews from Neil Harris and the Millwall fans. Basically because he's back to what he does best. He's just being asked to defend.
Mm.
And it's nice to see that he's not useless. He has got that ability. Unfortunately, just not in a Stam team.
That's the thing, isn't it, for Jake Cooper? It's sad. It's wrong place, wrong time, really, for him. Wrong manager.
Yeah. But we'll see how that gets on. But it's just unnervingly positive. I'm sitting here struggling because I like to, you know, create debate. I like to get into to the pros and the cons of this, but I'm struggling to see the cons. I'm really out. I mean, the one argument you could make is there any possible disruption to team spirit? I mean, Lewis Grabban has on occasion, he's gone AWOL, he forced down that move to Bournemouth. Jordan Much as well. Again, the Crystal Palace guy we spoke to, El Hintney, can be a little bit of a troublemaker when he's unhappy. Not as in a Danny Guthrie-style troublemaker, but as in a bit of a Sarky.
No lobster Thermidor.
Is there any danger to team spirit that, you know, this group that's done so well to get out these results, any danger that these five new guys are going to upset that?
Not too much in my mind. I think Grabban and Much have both been promoted before, haven't they?
Yep.
So that should at least, you know, if Stam's going to say, go and chat to these new lads, just go and ask them what it's like to get promoted.
What about Reece Oxford? Because I don't think West Ham are going to let him come to Reading just to sit on the bench. But at the same time, is he good enough to just play week in, week out? Is this a Chalobah situation where we saw Oliver Norwood shunted off to the sidelines to play this lone player? Are you happy for that to happen? Because, as you mentioned, Mark, this is a player that you're not going to be able to sign permanently. With half an eye on the future, are you happy for him to play ahead of your own prospects?
If he's going to play in centre-back in the back three, then I think I'd pick him anyway. If we're playing a back two and McShane and Moore, bit of form, bit of injury wobbliness, he's certainly an option. But, I mean, this is a kid who got incredible reviews when he made his debut at West Ham at the start of last season, I think it
fantastic
was.
Fantastic at Arsenal in a 2-0 win.
Yeah, so I kind of think it's like a Nathan Ake kind of signing. I think that this is someone who is going to most probably be a first-team regular in the Premier League team in years to come, and he's a young player, so there's a risk, but if he's playing in a back three instead of Joey Vandenberg, then I'm perfectly happy for that.
Anyone above Joey Vandenberg in the defence is good for me. Johnny, any worries for you?
No worries, but I was going to mention Slaven Bilic's comments about the signing of Reece Oxford, where he's basically said, I've sent him on loan to Reading because Jaap Stam's their manager. And I think, you know, that speaks volumes not only of what Jaap Stam is doing as a manager, but also that thing we talked about with the prestige. And it's something that we've never really had in a Reading manager, is that big name. It's always been the underdog sort of manager, whereas you're seeing now the fact that Jaap Stam is here, the fact that he was a world-class centre-back in the day, is really, you know, turning the heads of players and potentially of other managers. And now they're looking at their young defenders and saying, Jaap Stam is going to give these guys a real good education. So I think in the short term and in the long term, the very fact that Jaap Stam is here is real, real positive.
Okay, two other things to bring up before we move on to the mailbag, which has got plenty of really good questions in this week, so thank you for those. First one, if there is a slight concern, Johnny, we talked about the finances a couple of weeks ago, and suddenly Reading are signing all these players. Now, they made that massive loss last year. They've not exactly raked in the cash this season, but they seem to be happy to splash out on wages and big transfer fees. Where has the money come from? Now, we know that they received this £10.4 million loan from a Chinese group linked to the takeover that at the moment still hasn't gone through. Again, any concerns about where the money's coming from, or is this just something you go, well, they got the loan, they might as well use it?
Well, that, I mean, that's obviously a concern by the fact that the takeover hasn't gone through yet, and knowing what we do about their consortium's attempt to take over Hull and why and how it failed. And, you know, like I speculated at the start of when we started talking about the transfers we've made, the fact that they are all short-term loans, I guess is a good and a bad thing, because on the plus side, it means if the Thai owners do decide, right, we're not putting any more money in, then you're not lumbered with these big contracts, as we saw in the Anton era. However, on the flip side, it does say, in a sense, we're not committed to this club long term. Now, I'm not saying that we should have gone out and broken the bank and, you know, signed Grabban on a three-year deal for £5 million or signed Jordan Mutch on a three-year deal for £3 million. But I guess, you know, it's the flip side of the arguments, really, whether it shows commitment, whether it shows cash availability, or whether it just shows we think we've got a good enough squad, let's just try and supplement it for the next 4 months.
Do you think there's been a shift in the transfer policy in the last couple of weeks of the window, Mark? Do you think it is more of a case of we're really going to go for it this season, we're going to put our eggs more into this season's basket? Or do you just think that this is just a normal evolution of the policy we've seen from the start of the season?
I do kind of get the sense that it's a normal evolution, because I don't know if these players like Mutch and Grabban were even available at the start of the January window. Clubs like Palace and Bournemouth could well have been waiting for that £5 million fee to drop at their door, and letting them go on loan at the deadline day was probably their best solution. The reason I think it's an evolution is because, as you guys have said in this show quite a few times, is that the players we're signing permanently have some kind of resale value. If we were to sign Grabban for £5 million, I don't imagine we'd have really recouped that.
No, same for Mutch.
Same for Mutch. So that's why I think it's a bit of an evolution. And as I say, if he's 29, then there's not much point us gambling with what little we have.
No, all very fair points. So fingers crossed we do see some developments on the takeover front. It's all gone very quiet at the moment. And, you know, obviously the window is shut now, so it's not going to have any impact on that. But we would really like to see some movement just for the ease in the back of the mind. Anyway, that does wrap up the transfer window and news bites for this week. As I said, just a great damn window. Well done. So well done to Brian Tevreden. And the final point before moving on is also a hearty congratulations and well done once again to occasional Tarleton podcast guest and Bushwatch hero Jacob Southcline, who kept us all amused on deadline day. If you didn't follow him, if you're not aware what hashtag Bushwatching, what Bushwatch is, I don't know where you've been, because it was all over. I think it was trending in the UK at one stage.
He was on Radio 1. The only time I ever listened to Radio 1.
I think he was on
actually.
Radio 5 as well.
Yeah.
He was on Get Reading. Just a great little story. And the thing I like about Jacob is he takes it all in his stride. It's not an ego trip or anything. It's just a bit of fun. And I think it gives some great entertainment on deadline day.
Can't disagree.
Yep, he says supping his pint of water. toasting the great man.
Can I just make a final point on the transfers while we're here? This may be Wikipedia just speculating, but I see that Jordan Mutch now has the squad number 54.
Okay.
And apparently Lewis Grabban has the squad number 50.
I'm not sure about that whatsoever.
Like, no, this makes me dislike the players instantly. They're busts.
Well, the One of the worst things that'll be is obviously at the end of the season when like we lift the championship trophy, they have the players come out one by one in the tunnel by their numbers, don't they, usually? So we'll have like all the academy guys come out and they'll say, and number 79 is Rhys Oxford, which would just be weird.
Yeah. Rhys Oxford's only 32, which you can just about justify, but 54.
Might be much. I didn't think you were allowed to hand out numbers over 50, but anyway, we'll find out soon enough. Hopefully, most, if not all of them, will be in the squad. As mentioned, Thiago Alori unfortunately won't be. He is injured, but hopefully we'll see the other four over the next few weeks as well. Anyway, that does wrap up News Bites. We will move on to many more questions on the squad and transfers in the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Okay, as always, a massive thank you to everyone who's got in touch with us via the mailbag. It's a massive part of the show. And again, just thank you for giving up your time to send us in your questions and thoughts. We're always happy to answer them, even if they're not particularly related to something that's going on at the moment. It's always great to have them in. Send them into all the usual places, at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter. thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is the email address. And of course, you can go give our Facebook page a like as well at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. Right. We start this week with Jordan Cottle. He says, hi guys, here's something I've been thinking about recently. If we were guaranteed promotion, automatic or playoffs, it doesn't matter which, either this season or next, which would you pick? While Stam is doing a brilliant job this season, I can't help feeling that another year of building the team slash style in the championship might help us stay up in the long term. Obviously, a hypothetical situation, no one's going to turn down promotion this year, but interested to know your thoughts. Keep up the good work, chaps. Thank you very much, Jordan. Johnny.
I'd definitely go for this year because I know you say that it's guaranteed the next year as well, but I always think, as sad as it is, it's a money game. And the sooner you get that money, whether you come straight back down, you've got that money potentially in the bank to try and, you know, get back up and keep becoming a yo-yo side. You look at what Newcastle have done in terms of their players. They've spent about 50 million, although they did, you know, to be fair, they did sell a lot of players as well. Villa go out and spend £9 million on a championship striker on the final day. And Norwich, again, you know, have been splashing the cash, albeit not to quite the same extent. So I think I would definitely take promotion now. If anything, just because, like I say, it gives you that money in the bank. Potentially, it makes us more attractive to a potential buyer if you can say, hey, take over this money, all the TV money. Look at this, the Premier League, best league in the world.
What I will say on this is that ordinarily, I would say, okay, maybe you do want to build a side. But the type of players needed to play this style of football are the best players, the highly technical, skilled players. And you know how you get those players? By being a Premier League side. You can attract those players that have already got the sort of technical skills and ability to play a Stam style of football far easier in the Premier League, because you have the money and the gravitas to just get them in. You don't have to spend time training them up and trying to work on them in the Championship. And Mark, I look at teams like Middlesbrough, and you could say, oh, well, Middlesbrough built for years under Karanka and had a couple of near misses before they went up, but look at how they're struggling this year. So I don't necessarily think that, even if you think, okay, well, we're more equipped to go up now, I don't think it always works that way.
The team that has worked for is Burnley, and they went up and back down and have gone back up again. And I think that's probably the better way of doing it, is that teams have yo-yoed around for a bit, like West Brom and Burnley, as I say, have made a really good fist of it on that second time round. Middlesbrough have built and not, you know, they're kind of neither here nor there at the moment. The other thing that I would say is the reason why I'd want to go up this year is that the Premier League sort of lower mid-table at the moment, you could see us slotting into that quite comfortably with the cash on offer. And, you know, taking on teams like Watford, Middlesbrough, Burnley.
It does seem a bit of a soft underbelly to the league, doesn't it?
It's penetrable, isn't it? And next, it might not be in a couple of years, because, you know, in a couple of years, Villa, Newcastle, bigger teams could have got their act in order, and then that automatically makes it tougher.
Yeah, and there's no, again, there's no guarantee that Stam won't get picked up, that Reading's better players won't get picked up. In an ideal world, if you say, yep, Stam's going to get given 50 million, he signed a cast iron contract, means he's not going to leave. Maybe, but you've got to take what you can get when you can get it.
I have a feeling that, like, if this hypothetical scenario does turn out, one good year in the Premier League and Stam is gone.
I think so. I think, unfortunately, unless he turns Reading into an absolute juggernaut overnight, I think he's destined for better things. Gregor Dickey, a couple of questions for the next podcast after this weekend's win, obviously speaking before the Birmingham game. He said, number one, is it a concern that Liam Moore's conceded quite a few penalties this season, not just in the last week? Opposition could start going at him, knowing there's a mistake in him around the penalty area. And number two, if we were to find ourselves in the positions of the likes of Cardiff and QPR this season, sacking a manager about a third of the way into the season, would you be happy with Neil Warnock being made manager? He can obviously keep teams up and galvanise a squad, but with his history as an opposition manager, I would stay well clear. Keep up the good work. Well, let's tackle number two. If Reading were in a crisis facing relegation, would you welcome Mr. Warnock to the club?
No, I don't think.
Johnny?
I don't even need to think about it. No.
Yeah, I think you get. I think you'd rather fall on your sword than.
I think I'd probably rather get relegated.
Sacrifice to sell your soul for championship survival. Look, he's been a tremendously successful manager. I just think, everything about him, his style of football is.
I think I've spent not a second less than my time watching Reading despising Neil Warnock.
He's just.
I couldn't go back on that.
You know, you use old school a lot with affection with some people, and on a day that we said goodbye to a great man in Graham Taylor, definition of an old school manager. You know, Graham Taylor retired 12 years ago for good reason. Neil Warnock has not evolved with the times, but he is grudgingly good at keeping teams up. It's just not how I want my football club to play.
I admire what he does, but I fundamentally dislike him.
I think that's the best
way to put it. Professionally, I like his name.
No.
I couldn't say what
Neil Warnock's Barmy Army.
Professionally, I like him, but personally, I despise him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like, it's like players like Robbie Savage, who
I just despise him.
Yeah, it's just like.
Personally and professionally.
Yeah.
I don't like these. Some people say, oh, yeah, but you love him when he's on your team. It's like, no. No, I just feel a bit. I still feel a bit dirty.
That's a good question, though, for future mailbags. Is have we ever had those players that you do feel a bit like, oh, I don't really want to support this guy?
I don't think so. I think we've generally signed good eggs.
Yeah, maybe Drenta might slip into that, but only after he started going off the ball.
Possibly. But even then, Drenta wasn't the kind of player that would really wind up an opposition. He wasn't that kind of, oh, God, that guy's playing against us today.
Like a Barton.
Exactly that. So we've done a pretty good job in the recruitment over the years. Going back to his first question then, we sort of touched on this in the recap. Again, is it a flaw in his game overall, Johnny? Or is this just, again, just a series of unfortunate events? Is it a Lemony Snicket?
All right, Lemony, I was going to say. I don't think it's too much to worry about. I think particularly with the one against Cardiff, he was just a little bit unlucky, really. He didn't
Wasn't much of a penalty, was it, really? Minimal contact with Mr. Morrison, who made a cereal meal out of it.
And again, you know, that was just at a corner. I don't think you can really plan to you know, put a free kick into an area where Moore might flail a leg at Sean Morrison. It's not something that I'd worry about too much, and I think you've seen enough of the good that Liam Moore does in his defensive work.
So. Okay. Callum Reid, he says, I'm surprised to the date that I've not got in contact with you. Avid Reading fan, have been following the Royals for 22 or 23 years now. Been living in Sydney for 7 years now. Managed to get to see 45 minutes of foggy football against Fulham at Christmas. Yay! Anyway, delighted with how the team are going. Also, some great additions coming in on deadline day. Pleased to see Grabman replace Samuel, although he's got a strong record at this level. I'm slightly concerned at the amount of game time he's had over the last 12 months and not sure if he can produce his best for the last 4 to 5 months of the season when Jan is doing enough work. A concern is also the amount of midfielders we have. Much as one promotion with Cardiff and got Premier League experience, but does that mean Evans will be dropped? Not sure how Yap is going to keep everyone happy.
On the first point about Grabban's fitness, this is a point that I constantly bring up. Liam Moore, when he came to the club, had not played a professional game of football since January. And you look at what he did, and almost instantly, he showed what class he had. Now, you hope that someone like Lewis Grabban can do that and come straight in. And I'm sure that the Reading fans will make him feel welcome, and the Reading squad will make him feel welcome. As for the midfield, I don't think you can ever really have too many options. And, you know, like we said, if you're playing Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Friday, Thursday, every day of the week, as it seems to be now, I don't think you can ever have enough options.
If every single player in that squad was 100% fit, he might start to have worries. But we've already said, Thiago Alori's out for 6 weeks. Looks like Joey Vandenberg's done his hamstring in. He came off injured against Cardiff, and that looks pretty bad. So immediately, yeah. Stephen Quinn is a long-term absentee. No sign of him coming back. We've mentioned Rackles has only just come back to fitness. Kermigan's got niggles. McShane's got niggles.
Kelly, like I say, you don't want to burn him out.
Exactly. So I think, I mean, Mark, is there any worry that he will have a bit of disharmony?
No, not too much for me. I think if we were talking about the 2012 season earlier, I think we went to Southampton that time. We won 3-1 with Mullins and Tabb as our two midfielders.
It was, yeah.
And obviously it was all about Carrishan and Ledgerwood. These things can happen. In the playoffs the year before, we went with Sean Cummings at right midfield. Stuff happens at short notice. A player can get ruled out for 3 weeks and that is his season, effectively.
Yeah, and you look at the season under Nigel Adkins, the 13-14 season, Johnny, where we had to go to Bournemouth playing four wingers in the midfield because we just couldn't get in those reinforcement bodies. And, you know, if we'd got a point there, we would have been in the playoffs. So
it looks difficult now, but in March, Newcastle at home on the Tuesday, then we're playing games on the Saturdays either side. You'll need
and the other thing as well is if the team's winning, it's a lot easier to keep everyone happy because you're like, oh, everyone's in a great mood around the place and I can understand why I'm not playing. It's only when you start losing games, as Reading fan in the past couple of seasons, where a big squad full of lots of loanies and things like that can really play against you. But that's not going to be the case this year. Everyone is going to be really determined to get into that squad. Jack Simon says, who is your centre-back partnership out of Paul McShane, Liam Moore, Alex Pearce and Sean Morrison based on their current age and ability, etc.? There you go. Out of the two, who would you have out of those four? Sorry, out of the four, which two would you have?
Liam Moore, definitely.
Okay.
I was never that great a Sean Morrison fan. I know that there was a good chant for him. Alex Pearce, I think his limitations have been exposed. I'd probably go Moore and McShane.
Okay, Mark?
I would have Moore in as well, for starters. The problem I have with McShane is that he does get caught high up the pitch. Do Alex Pearce and Sean Morrison solve that? No, they don't. So at the end of the day, I would probably have to go McShane. But Pearce, on current ability, looks to be getting towards the kind of thing we saw from him at his best at the Medeski. So he'd be the third choice, I would say.
I would go Moore and Morrison purely on the basis that Sean Morrison's threat from set pieces just gives you another weapon. He's always going to get you 4 to 6 goals a season. He's taken the armband at Cardiff. He seems quite popular and he's just that extra threat, both offensively and defensively. Didn't really mention it in the recap either, but I mean, I thought Reading did really well dealing with a big team like Cardiff. In that game as well, it would have been very easy to get intimidated, and you know, with the likes of Bamber and Morrison there, but Reading did really well. So, but yeah, out of those four, I would have I think I'd probably rank them Moore number one, Morrison two, McShane three, and despite his world class headers, Alex Pearce unfortunately fourth. Simon Coswell, I've been awake thinking, if everyone was fit, what's our best 11? I'm really struggling. Here's a slobber knocker of a question for you, Johnny. I think Ali Alhabsi in goal, I think we'll all agree on. Chris Gunter's probably a unanimous choice at right back. Is Jordan
we need to decide the formation first.
Well, okay. That's the thing, is it three at the back? Because are we going to fit Thiago Ilori in there somewhere?
I think so. Okay, he has played three at the back a lot, so we'll go for a back three. Okay. Ilori,
McShane and Moore.
Ilori, McShane and Moore.
Yeah.
Gunter and Obita.
Okay, I think I'm pretty much on the same page. Then you've got the three midfielders. Swift and Kelly, we were saying, are undroppable earlier. So presumably they're both in.
Williams.
I'm not convinced about Williams.
No. Can I pick Oxford? Can I throw in Oxford?
I was thinking of throwing in Oxford.
The holding man between Kelly and Swift.
I kind of worry. It would be such a young midfield. Not, you know, age is no object, but you'd have, what, a 17-year-old?
Two low 20.
Yeah, a 20 and 22-year-old.
And also, a player we've never seen in the flesh.
I've seen him in the flesh.
Not seen much of a lot
of him. How would you fit Behrens, McCleary and Kermigan into that as well?
And Grabber and people like that. This is an interesting one.
This is why Simon's been awake thinking.
Indeed.
Maybe he's still awake thinking.
I think Swift and Kelly get in there. I think, I don't know out of much Oxford and Williams at the moment. I think you can make a case for any of them. McCleary, got to be in that side as well. So that only really leaves you with one spot.
Kermigan
or Behrens or Grabben.
Purely because you've got to play, I'd like to play a striker.
Preferably. Yeah,
and he does do a good job for the team.
I might be really controversial and say Grabben ahead of Kermigan. I think Graben, based on if Graben can be Graben from two seasons ago.
It's interesting, isn't it, that we bring in, five players in the transfer deadline day, and we're already saying that three of them are in the best 11 that we've got.
Yeah, so...
potentially.
Yeah, anyway, you certainly want to get your teams in. Send them into at the Tireless End at Twitter. Jack Killick says, what a fantastic transfer window. Not only did we get the signings we need in the end, but we managed to not lose any first-team players either. Feeling very positive about the rest of the season. I'm sure we will make the playoffs now. Also, a quick mention about Liam Kelly, who's now become an extremely important player. I just love watching him play every week. How important do you think he is to the team now? I think we covered that earlier by basically saying that he is he's all but undroppable. So I hope that answered your question anyway, Jack. Anyway, that wraps up the mailbag this week. Thank you for all of your questions. You can send them in, as mentioned, to at the Tireless End on Twitter, thetirelessend@gmail.com, or at facebook.com/thetirelessend. We will move on now to any other business and preview our next game, which is a trip to Portman Road to take on Mick McCarthy's Ipswich.
The Tirelessend End podcast. Any other business?
Ipswich, a team that are not having a great season. They're 17th in the table. They're 20 points behind us. They've only won one out of their last five. The pressure is growing on Mick McCarthy. Not good things going on there at the moment. I think the fans are unhappy with their owner, Marcus Evans. So, of course, they'll probably go and beat Reading because that's the way the world seems to work. But in all seriousness, Johnny, you can't look at this team compared to what Reading have just done and think that there's going to be anything but a Reading win, or is that just being overly arrogant?
I don't think it's being overly arrogant, but we've certainly seen with a result like our defeat at home to QPR that you can't go into any game expecting to win it. Cliche alert, there are no easy games in the Championship. Cliche alert.
Portland, I'd love Brody. A manager just to come out once for a Championship game and go, yeah, we got this.
Stroll.
This is the one easy game. Do you know what?
Portland, seriously, Brody, easy place to go, yeah.
I think if you take on Rotherham at home now, you should seriously be going into a press conference saying, yeah, this is an easy game
just
in the Championship.
Just rolling in like shorts and flip-flops.
Yeah.
Get the sunglasses out, lads.
But you look at that team... I mean, Freddie Sears and Brett Pittman, yeah, they've got goals.
Tom Lewis is on a decent run of form.
Yeah.
He scored some incredible goals.
Yeah. I mean, we did only beat them with a last minute penalty earlier in the season. So, and Portman Road's not been a massively happy hunting ground over these.
Tough place to go.
We went there a couple of years ago and won with a Jamie Mackey goal, I remember. And what was our result there last season? So forgettable, isn't it? Our games with Ipswich away are so forgettable.
Yeah, I remember winning 3-2 there with a couple of late set pieces. I think that was the season we won promotion.
It was, yeah.
But no, Mark, I mean, can you see anything other than 3 points Reading in this one?
Well, I think Derby absolutely hammered them.
3-0, yeah.
And that was at half-time, it was 3-0. The third goal, if you see the highlights, Darren Bent has just scored the easiest goal of his life. And he's not even on his own, not even on his own goal line as well, which is quite impressive. So... we've got to be winning that.
Bookmakers say Ipswich are 7-5, the draw is 9-4, and Reading are 19-10. So not a lot in it, really, as far as the bookmakers are concerned, Johnny. They can't really seem to pick a result in this one. We'll move on to the prediction league, which you top on 27 points. You correctly got the Cardiff score right with a 2-1. Other people have picked up points along the way to leave the standings with you on 27. Handbags is on 25. Myself and Charles Watts are on 24. And unfortunately, Westy, unlike his day job, hasn't delivered. He is down to 19 points. So
go home, Dan.
Go home. I am home.
That's true.
You go home.
Okay. Well, you need my prediction first. Okay.
Yes.
Quick quiz question first. If we beat Ipswich, what record of theirs will we break?
Ooh.
Is it like most home defeats in a season?
No.
As in if Reading win?
Yes. If Reading beats Ipswich, what record of theirs will we break?
Is it the most in points improvement in a season?
No. I've given enough time for the listeners to ponder that one over as well.
Or to pause the podcast. You can just pause it.
Yeah, and go and Google it. If this is wrong, then I really regret it, but I believe...
Criticisms to @Jonathan on Twitter. Yes, sorry, carry on.
@Jonathan. I believe they've gone about 25 games in the Championship without consecutive results. I.e. they've not drawn two games in a row, they've not lost two games in a row, they've not won two games in a row.
Oh, so we will end their record.
Yes. Because they've
lost. Sorry, I thought you meant Reading would be replacing one of their records.
No. So, okay. well, that in theory, if you go by records, we shouldn't beat them. However, the 3-1 Bandit is confident that we will beat them 3-1.
Okay, 1-3. I will go for a conservative 1-1 draw, even though I've just said I can't say anything other than a Reading win. Shows the hypocrite I am. When it comes to putting my money where my mouth is. Mark, you're not in the prediction league, but we'll let you have an honorary prediction anyway for bragging rights.
I would have to go 2-0 to Reading.
2-0 to Reading. Okay, great. And yeah, that just about wraps up the show this week. Again, apologies that there is currently no podcast extra. Sure, you're all well aware of the transition period that Get Reading are going through. You know, we might we'll end up linking up with the Chronicle. We might not. At the moment, it's just seems to be working well as we are. I know people do enjoy the podcast extra, but it's just not very feasible.
We can just do it amongst ourselves. We're all sports journalists. I'll just claim that I'm representing my day job.
It might very well come to that. I don't know. It's taking a little break at the moment anyway. We'll come back fierce with something whenever we do it. So apologies for that. But do head over to tylerson.com. Lots of great content. You know, we mentioned the Crystal Palace view on Jordan Much. We've also got not just what a Romanian football expert thinks of Adrian Popper, but we've also got what the Football Manager database makes of him as well. We've got a Bournemouth fan opinion of Lewis Graben that'll be going up in the next sort of 24 hours as well. Lots of analysis from Deadline Day as well. We'll have all the previews and the build up to the Ipswich game and obviously all the match reports and ratings up from Birmingham as well. So loads of content. Head over to tylerson.com for that. And as mentioned at the top of the show, if you do like what you're doing, if you do think, you know what, this podcast has got me through an annoying set of traffic, or I'm listening to this at work, or it's helped me get through doing the housework, or you just think, you know, those lads do well, head over to the Patreon campaign, patreon.com/thetylehurstend, and just stick a couple of quid in our pockets. It does give us that nice little boost and that extra push to keep going. So and thank you to everyone who's taken part in that so far. But in the meantime, gents, you two have paid the ultimate price in so much as you've turned up today. So I can only thank you for that.
What, is that the end? Are we being ended? Are we being terminated?
And my finger is over the eject button
the,
now.
The lights are dimming in here. There's some very strange goings on.
Yeah, my terminology was slightly awry, but I have been up for about 19 hours, so please forgive me. Anyway, no better...
You've served your purpose.
Yes, I have. Yeah, you will go into the pit of lava with the laser sharks any second now. So we'll have new guests next week.
That's where Danny Guthrie is, isn't it? Is the tallest end pit of lava.
What, Blackburn? I mean, it's not that bad. Come on, Mark. Oh, honestly, apologies, people of Blackburn. Sure, it's not a lava pit full of sharks.
Should be a new award, that should. Rename the Howard Robson Carno Award the Pit of Lava Award.
The Pit of Lava Award. Okay, anyway. I can think of no better note to end it than that. As always, thanks for getting in touch. Thanks for supporting the show. And most of all, come on, you arse.
Social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetylehurstend
and facebook.com/thetylehurstend.